I'd like to discuss musical improvisation with you. Before we get into the music, let's just think about the term improvisation. Let's get some concepts, some ideas about what it means to improvise anything, and then we'll apply this to the realm of music. Improvise is to compose, recite, or sing on the spur of the moment. Extemporize, to make, invent, or arrange offhand. Doing something spontaneously that you did not prepare or rehearse to do in that manner. To act in an unpredictable manner. Although, when I say unpredictable, it does not mean that it has to be bizarre or chaotic. To invent as you go. To think on your feet. Now, when we apply this to music, how often do we truly improvise? How often do we truly make up things on the spur of the moment? Do we not really go through pre-planned scales, arpeggios, licks, things that we know that work in certain times? Do we not play passages where the fingers travel trails that they have traveled many times before, and we just play by reflex action? Is this not what we do and what we hear for the most part? Where is the spontaneity? Where is the creativity? Where is the self-expression? Improvisation is self-expression. It's really doing your own thing. But it's doing your own thing subject to influences. I would like to explain the validity of influences and the invalidity of mimicry. It seems to me that when you are subject to influences, you are really showing that you are aware of what's going on in the world and what has been going on in the world, that you receive the feedback from these other musical inputs, and that you are now allowing all of this to be absorbed by you, and that you finally express your feelings of what your influences have been. It's sort of like all of the influences you take in are mixed up with the real essence that is you, and what comes out musically, finally, is you, but subject to your influences. On the other hand, to parrot, to mimic, to copy, is to really present someone else's message or speech in which you really are only the transmitter. There is no commitment from you. You have simply presented someone else's material. You have been the medium. Musical improvisation is not playing one musical lick after another. It is not playing other people's material. It is not playing things off of records or choruses that have been copied off and passed around among friends. It is not any number of variations that have been developed in a university or from some scholastic or academic point of view, in which you end up with a little booklet of 58 ways to play something on C7 to amaze your friends and other musicians. In order to be yourself, you have to find yourself. You have to know yourself. Just pretend that you were able to open up your head and let flow out all of the thoughts that you are holding, all of the values you are holding right now, and you pour them out onto a table. And if you looked at all of these things that you're holding, you will find that you're holding many ideas and values about many things. What you think of other people, of other races, of other nationalities, politics, various forms of lifestyles, art, music. Any subject that anyone would mention to you, you would have a thought about it. You either liked it, you didn't like it, you liked a certain thing about it, or you didn't know anything about it. Now, up until this point of self-examination, every thought that you have is something received from your parents. It has been told to you, and you have believed it. As we examine all of these concepts that we hold on the table now, that we look at, that we have been holding in our minds, our values of all the things that we have thought about, as we look at these things, we see, as we pick up each one and handle it, we can evaluate it with our present day knowledge, and we see that here is one thing that we're holding that is an attitude about something that it may have been true 10 years ago, but it is no longer true. Here is one that may have been true in Texas, but it's not true in Oregon. Here is one that may be true for women, but it's not true for men. Here is a thing that's true for musicians, but it's not true for painters. Here is something our parents told us when we were very young that they told us was true, but it never was true, and they did not know that it was not true. Here's another thing that they knew was not true, but they told us that it was true so that we might be, in quotes, a good boy or a good girl. For example, come in before it gets dark or the goblins will eat you up. Here is something that was true at the time we were living with them, but is no longer true. And so, as we look at all of the various values that we see on this table, having emptied them out of our mind, we see that only a few of the many values that we are holding deserve to go back into our mind. And those that deserve to go back are those that serve us now, that are of value now and have meaning and serve us now. When we reach the point where we have emptied out all that we're holding in our mind of all the concepts and values that we have learned from our parents, this is the first time that we really come to ourselves, because up until that time, we have been parroting the values of others as though they were our own. As we continue through life now, making our own decisions of what is a value, we put these things into our mind and add to these few concepts held over from our parents that are still valid. This is developing yourself. First, you must begin to find yourself. When you really find yourself, you're at point zero, because there's nothing of self, because you've done nothing to develop self. All you've done is parrot the values that have been instilled in you. So you begin by finding yourself, which is to get back to point zero. Then you start developing yourself. As you take in more information and more values that you have honestly sought for yourself and have thought about and analyzed and weighed and assessed, you then are developing yourself. As you continue to develop yourself and build a storehouse of values and information, you will become so full of this that it is only then that you can begin to express yourself. Expressing yourself is having what is within you going out. Artistic expression is really letting what is within you come out. In these days, there is so much preoccupation with people doing their own thing that they fail to realize that just because they're doing their own thing, it doesn't mean that their own thing is valid or valid for anyone else, or that it will have any kind of sustaining power or meaning for anyone else. So I would say that when you are striving to do your own thing, make sure that your own thing is worth doing. The same way in improvising. The first thing is to be able to play what you hear. That would be the first plateau to reach, would be to be able to play what you hear. The second would be to make sure that what you hear is worth playing, that it has some musical validity. Improvisation and jazz are not synonymous. It is possible to improvise jazz, but just because you improvise, it doesn't make it jazz. You could be improvising Indian ragas. You could be improvising on polkas. You could be improvising any form of music. Jazz is one form of music in which improvisation could be used. Jazz is a dialect of music. Jazz is one particular set of dialectical values that we can use to express music. It is not a fusion of jazz and rock, or jazz and raga, or jazz and Bach. It is simply jazz. It is a dialect of music that includes certain characteristics and certain values and excludes other characteristics and values. One of the big things about jazz is that the underlying motive is love, expression, and money may be second or not at all. It is not a formulae. It is not based on formulae. It is not based on preset devices to get a hit record, although I'm sure any jazz musician would be delighted in giving a hit record. But the hit record comes after the fact. Well, it's not something that's conceived to sell. It's conceived because it is artistic expression, but then as a result of being artistic expression, it may sell. I feel that if you start with the idea of making jazz music, there's every chance that it could be sold for money. But if that you start with the idea of money, there's almost no chance that it will end up being jazz. Jazz also, really in its highest forms, involves a certain amount of integrity. It involves that you call upon your highest creative sources to be spontaneous, and that you dare to be yourself, that you are not intimidated by the cliches of others or even of your own, that you do not work out slick, workable, formulae, device-oriented music. While we're talking about what jazz isn't, it is not the compilation of a series of licks. To me, I've never liked the word lick. It has never served me well. To me, what a lick is in music is it's almost like a computerized cliche that is no different than a computerized verbal cliche. It is something that you have said over and over or others have said. You pick it up, you use it. It has no vitality because it does not come from the deep wellsprings of you at a spontaneous moment. That's why it has no vitality, because you were not urgent and compelled to produce this statement at the moment. So it's really pre-digested data, and it has no validity. A string of these cliches only makes it more offensive than the cliche hanging there by itself, so that we get one grand cliche line as opposed to small cliches floating around sort of unattached. The vitality of musical improvisation really lies in the musical line, the musical statement, not how you voiced it, not whether you were wearing a gold lamé suit, not whether you were standing there with a strobe light on you, not whether you're playing a red guitar or a green one. It's the validity of the musical statement. It's what you're saying, not how you're saying it. If we were to use the analogy of someone making a speech, it's not how the orator looks. It's not even the quality of his voice. It's more, what is he saying? What does it mean? And what does it mean to him, really? And then in turn, what does it mean to you? To be really creative, you simply must be yourself. You can be yourself subject to influences, but you are not yourself when you are subject to imitation. In my experience, most people are not themselves when improvising musically for two reasons, one of two reasons. One is they do not know themselves. They don't know who they are. They've never spent any time finding themselves, developing themselves, or expressing themselves. The other is they do know who they are and they don't like it. They don't like it because they have had other musicians devalue their efforts or intimidate them so that they are very, very meek about allowing the embryonic state of their own inventiveness or the feeble flutterings of their own mind to go beyond this initial state, being intimidated by others. So the natural result is that they put away their own thoughts and they begin to look around and see who is successful, who is considered, in quotes, good, who is now making it, and they pattern themselves after a winner. And so they begin to develop a thing that I feel is really a very prevalent thing today in music, and that is conformity. And so the thought process begins something like this. Who is around today that's making it, that's considered good? What do they do, and how can I do the same thing? If they like that person, maybe they'll like what I do. And when you do that, you miss the grand experience of self-expression, which is one of the greatest things you can have in your life, to have made some music that's your very own. But please remember that just because you make this music that's your very own does not mean that it automatically is held valid by others. It may be. I certainly hope that it is. If it isn't, in time, it can be. But we should strive to be ourselves. Now, if improvisation is making up things at the moment, I can't think of any better way to learn how to make up things at the moment than to begin making up things at the moment. And this means that when you're playing a song, you should begin making up things at the moment that you have never made up before. Dare to make a mistake. Use it as a stepping stone. I believe that you only fail when you stop trying. So it doesn't matter that you made a mistake. You won't make that mistake again. And as time goes on and you dare to be spontaneous and be creative and flow, let it flow from you in the same way as when you meet someone for the first time and you have not prepared a speech, you have not prepared dialogue with them. Greet this song, this new song, with a new feeling within you that you want to play something that you have not played before, and dare to search for it, dare to look for it, and dare to make mistakes, knowing that as you do this and as time goes on, you will become better and better at improvising on the spur of the moment. The three basic threads of which the tapestry of music is woven are melody, rhythm, and harmony. As we approach improvisation, one way that we could upgrade our improvisation, the quality of it, is to consider each of these three threads separately and see how we can improve qualitatively each of these, which would finally make for a more complete, homogeneous musical entity. As we look at melody, and I want you to think about it in terms of your own playing, when you improvise, how melodic are you? Do you really make up melodies? To begin with, if you really have any aspirations about being an improvising musician, you should really be hearing melodies within yourself all the time, whether you have a guitar in your hands or not. There should be melodies. You should be singing internally. You should be hearing musical things in your mind's ear. Now, as you improvise on a song, ask yourself and consider some of these things about melody. Are you making up melodic passages? That is, do you improvise in such a way that someone could sing what you play? Could someone put words to the notes that you play? Are these memorable melodies? Do your melodies, when you improvise, do your melodies linger on and on as some of the songs have lingered on and on through the years? If not, this would certainly be a thing to consider. Now, this doesn't mean that you would always and constantly be melodic, but it means that if you are not melodic at all now, or hardly at all, that you would strive to become more aware of the melodic aspect of music. The next we would consider would be rhythm. Although in actuality, rhythm is the fundamental consideration in music. Rhythm is that which is most discernible in primitive music, and it is also that element in music which is the element that can be used to manipulate the listener. It is that element which is the most hypnotic of the three, in that rhythm patterns can be played over and over and over to create a sort of a hypnotic trance through the repetition of this rhythm. And the simpler the rhythm it is, the briefer the rhythm. For example, any rhythm pattern that is contained within one measure would tend to manipulate or hypnotize the listener more than a more involved passage or a lengthier passage or a passage that the rhythm kept varying. It's this constant rhythm. For example, one rhythm that comes to mind is a one-bar pattern that, if it were played over and over and over, could become very hypnotic. Something like this. Boom, 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 boom. It's interesting to note that rhythm therapy is being used in several parts of the world to rehabilitate mental patients who are in the catatonic state. That as time goes on and they listen to these recurring short rhythmic phrases, they move from a state of being catatonic to finally where a little toe wiggles or a foot wiggles or their body begins to move and they become more animated, and finally they can become aware and alert enough that they can be fed with food instead of intravenous glucose injections. As you examine your own improvisation, it might be very helpful for you to ask some questions of yourself. For example, do you constantly just play a stream of eighth notes in your improvisation, or do you play a great variety of rhythmic phrases? Do you employ the use of double time, that is, playing twice as fast as the tempo? Do you employ the use of half time, playing half as fast against the tempo, moving half as fast as the tempo being played? Do you imply superimposition rhythmically, that is, the rhythm may be in 4-4, but in your mind you're playing 6-8 against the 4-4. It's as though you hear a rhythm section playing, but you hear another rhythm section in your head, and it's playing a different tempo, but one that is in agreement with the one that's actually being played. While we're speaking of rhythm, are you aware in your playing that you rush the tempo or drag the tempo at any given time? In order to help you stabilize, it might be very helpful to know that if you're having any problem about maintaining tempo, it's very good to learn to breathe while you're playing, especially if you're playing an instrument that does not require you to blow. Quite often, when you are tense, you hold your breath. This is the very time you need to breathe evenly. As you breathe evenly, in and out, in an even manner, you become better able to realize exactly what the tempo is and to adjust yourself to that tempo. It's only when you hold your breath that those perceptors within you will not allow you to know if you're rushing or dragging. Are you aware that when you're playing, for example, if you are having a session in a club or with friends, that the social interaction with others might cause you to rush or drag? That if you're drinking, you might slow up a bit. Or if you've had a big meal, you might slow up a bit. Or if you haven't had enough sleep, you might slow up a bit. On the other hand, you might be very hyperactive if you happen to see an old friend that you hadn't seen before, or if you realized that there was a musician in your presence whom you respected very much, or even someone that you felt you were involved in some sort of competition, All of this tends to make you rush. So remember to keep breathing evenly. Be aware of it, and this will help you to stabilize yourself, to play within the tempo that is being played by the rhythm section. Quite often before a concert or before the first set playing in a club, I find it very helpful to relax through a system of breathing, which not only helps me to relax, but also is probably very helpful by allowing me to play in stricter time and not rush or drag when playing with the rhythm section. This breathing technique consists of breathing in very deeply and then exhaling as much as you can, and then adding a little more exhalation and letting out all the rest that's left there. So it really consists of one inhalation and two exhalations per exercise. In 1 minute, you should be able to do about 12 sets of these exercises, a set being one inhalation and two exhalations. The heart rests on the second exhalation. By developing a workable breathing technique for yourself, you will find that it will relax you before you play, it will relax you while you play, and it will help you to sort of stay in sync with the rhythm section. Whether they're playing fast or slow, you will not rush or drag as much as you would have had you not breathed properly or stopped breathing and had allowed the tensions in your body to accumulate. When we consider harmony, or the harmonization of our improvisation, we must realize that it is the most sophisticated of the three considerations. It is the one that fewer listeners are concerned with. In other words, as people listen to music, the first thing they grasp is the rhythm. The second is the melody. And finally, if at all, the harmony. Many listeners are unaware that they're listening to an incorrect harmonization of a song. It sounds absolutely wonderful just the way they're listening to it. Sometimes many harmonic indignities have been performed and the listener is totally unaware. Sometimes, for certain, the performer is unaware. Many of his associates may be unaware, leaving very few people to be aware or even to care. Nevertheless, harmonic considerations are certainly an important part of our development when we consider improvisation. When you improvise, do you use correct chords or good chords or acceptable chords in the song? Do you always harmonize your improvisation in the same way? Do you always voice your chords in the same way? If you're playing a progression, for example, and it's G minor 7 to C7, do you always play your voicings the same way? Do you have one or two pet ways of voicing a chord? If so, I would encourage you to find other ways to open up your thinking, to open up your concept of variety, to open up your concept of really what improvisation is all about. Do you always improvise using only basic chords? Do you always improvise using polytonic chords, or that is chords built combining two triads? Or do you always use lush chords? If in your playing you always do something, I would be concerned about that and would try to change it, because the always in your playing indicates that what you do is predictable. Improvisation is unpredictable. So no matter what you do in your playing, the fact that you do it may be a very good thing. But the fact that you always do it would tend to be something to look at and examine and possibly change in your playing so that you would become more unpredictable, so that you would be presenting more musical surprises.